Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you with us today as we talk about growing fruit with our guest today. And we have three guests back from the UW-Madison and UW Extension. Leslie Holland is an assistant professor in fruit crops pathology in the Department of Plant Pathology. Leslie, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry.
Christelle Godot is an associate professor in fruit crop entomologist in the Department of Entomology. And Christelle, great to have you back.
Thanks for having us, Larry. Great to be here.
And finally, last but not least, Maya Atucha, who's an associate professor and fruit crop specialist in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences at the UW-Madison. Amaya, welcome back.
Thank you, Larry.
Good to have them here and good to have you listening in. And if you have some fruit questions for them, I hope you'll join in. You know, there's lots to talk about today on the show. You can call us at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Amaya, let's start with you for just a second. What problems? Here we've had drought conditions. All right, it's rained in parts of the Wisconsin in the last day or two, but we're still in drought conditions. What problems can arise with our fruit plants?
Yeah, we've definitely seen a lot of problems with fruit crops because of the drought. And also, I say it's been warm. And yeah. So both of those stress combined can have negative effects when it comes to fruit production. The early drought, the first part of the growing season when it was really dry, what mostly affects is the size of the fruits. So, and why is that? It's because when the fruits grow, so we have our blossoms and then we have fruit set, that very initial period in which those ovaries are, the walls of the ovaries are expanding, there's a lot of cell division happening at that point. And that sets basically the maximum potential that you can have on your fruit size. So if you have drought at that time, you ended up with smaller, less amount of cells that at the end of the season are going to expand to determine the final fruit size. So that's one issue a small fruit this year. Also, less fruit set. So overall, less fruits. Yeah. Just because flowers are just like, you know, pumped and full of water and they're like, you know, very sensitive to the heat and the water stress. So they dehydrate really fast. And so the flower might be receptive to the pollen, but then it will dry really fast. So there's not enough time for pollination and actually fruit set to happen. Oh. So that's another problem we say.
Let's take a look at disease for a minute. Leslie, what have you been seeing this year as you work around the state?
Well, unfortunately for me as a pathologist, not a lot this year in terms of disease because it has been so dry. I think, as we know, a lot of the fungal pathogens we typically see on fruit crops, they tend to move around when it's high humidity or high rain, neither of which we've had this season. So it's been a kind of a lonely or empty year for pathogens. I'd say perhaps maybe the one that's held on this year has been powdery mildew. And the reason powdery mildew has been able to show up is because it doesn't really require a lot of that same free water that a lot of other fungal pathogens do. So it's able to hide out in shady areas and still manifest.
Powdery mildew will be here regardless of the...
That's right. It's not picky.
You're always going to have powdery mildew in some plants, almost for sure. Well, Christelle, what about insects?
So insects, that's the nice part of it, is there's so many of them that some are going to be super happy when it's hot and dry, and some are not. So you probably have noticed that we don't see a lot of mosquitoes this year, and that's probably due to the dry conditions. So... Yay, we don't have a lot of mosquitoes. Japanese beetles seem to be off on a very slow start, so we'll see what happens in the future. But so far, not a lot of pressure from Japanese beetles, so we'll see if we have questions about them this year. But then other insects like mites or thrips, those smaller insects that you can see on, you know, rose bushes or things like that.
Yeah.
These are going to like those dry and hot conditions. So we see some of them that are very happy, some of them less so.
Well, we have callers online with questions for the three of you, so let's go to the phones right off the bat here to Brian in Appleton. Brian, hi. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I've got a cherry tree in my yard here in Appleton that actually fruited pretty well this year. I think it was last winter, one of the lower branches scooped tall tree that we're actually able to harvest from took some damage on the top. And I thought I pruned it well, but I didn't realize that the backside that's on my neighbor's fence had a large scar that continued to go down that branch towards the main trunk that my neighbor informed me this spring. And he has suggested taking the whole branch off. And I wanted to try to get some more advice than just my neighbor's opinion before I went and took off probably half my harvest if I take that branch down.
Yeah, Amaya, we'll go to you for that.
Yeah, let me ask you some follow-up questions. How old is your tree?
It is, we've been here 10 years, and it was pretty well established when we moved in.
Okay.
The first year, 2013, it had some bad frost damage, and I pruned it, and it didn't fruit that next year. And then every year since then, we've had pretty good harvest.
If you remove the entire branch with, like, sort of like older wood, especially if you tell me that this branch is by like the base of the trunk, you will have maybe a harder time getting a regrowth. Like if you want to replace that branch, for example, and you completely cut it off, especially if you're thinking about doing any kind of summer pruning right now, you might have to leave a little bit of a stump. So maybe something that is 4 to 5 inches long from the connection to the main trunk, so that you leave enough wood there that you would have some dormant buds that will break and you will have another branch. So basically that you're not going to be ended up by cutting that branch with that empty, non-productive area. So that's one recommendation. And the other thing is, like, I would wait until spring. If you do it when they're dormant, you have had more chances of stimulating that area around the cut to produce new shoots that could replace that branch. And then you can train that branch so that it doesn't go over your neighbor's yard and you can still have a productive area within your tree.
And in the meantime, then you can harvest the cherries from this year.
Yeah, exactly.
And get that taken care of. There you go, Brian. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Al in Green Bay. Hi, Al.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about honeyberry or hasscaps. The plants are, maybe 6 to 8 years old. They're beautiful plants. I have three plants, different varieties for basically so they produce fruit. The thing is, they produce maybe a handful of berries each year. And I'm just, I've gotten to the point where I'm just thinking I'm just going to yank them out. Is there something I can do, or is it, I'm beginning to think that when I got the plants, they gave me three of the same or something, the same variety.
Well, a couple of things to look for. First of all, when I get this question, I always ask, is it that you didn't have any flowers, or is it that you're seeing a lot of flowers, but you're actually not seeing a lot of fruit? So if that's the case, it could be that you're producing a lot of flowers, not getting fruit set because you might not have enough pollen, or there might not be enough overlap between the different cultivars, because honeyberries, they need to be cross-pollinated. So that might be one question. Have you seen any different patterns between your three different bushes in terms of, like, some of them might be blooming earlier than others? Now, if the question is more like, I don't see any flowers on my bushes, well, that's another reason. And here the question would be, are you pruning them so that they are getting enough light? Light is, key for flower development. Are you over-fertilizing them? Are you giving them too much nitrogen, maybe? And then you get a lot of vegetative growth, but not necessarily flowers. So if that's the case, cut down on the flowers. On the nitrogen and the fertilizer that you're applying. And then, obviously, in a season like this, are you providing them enough irrigation? So anything that is stressing the plants will also affect flower production. So just look at those plants. Start to remember whether it was an issue of not having enough flowers versus not having enough fruit set. And then, just go back and try to figure out what might be the cause of either one of those problems.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in as well. We're taking a look at fruit plants on the program today and all the different things. It could be insect problems. It could be disease problems. It could be just other kinds of cultural issues that you might be having. Or maybe you just have some questions about fruits and growing them. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us. The email address is ideas at WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Carol in Marinette emailed to say that she has a young apple tree planted about 5 years ago, and last winter she forgot to wrap the trunk, which is not a good thing because rabbits tend to like the bark, and rabbits ate the bark completely around the base. She thought she would lose the tree, but instead it leafed, flowered, and is now bearing fruit. Wonders what's going on. Well, they must not have completely chewed off all the bark around the tree.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, the tree is not going to put more. Basically, what the rabbits are doing, they're chewing over the part of the phloem that is the vascular tissue that is moving the sugars around the plant, and also it might chew into the xylem that moves the water from the roots to the top part, to the canopy of the tree in this case. So if you still have a small little connection, you will still have movement of water and sugar through that strip of bark that might be left. Now, what it also means is that that tree is going to be very stressed and it's never going to be able to recover. I mean, that once that bark is gone, the tree is not going to produce more of it, especially if the phloem and the cambium that originates both of these tissues have been eaten by the rabbit. So you need to be careful with crop load on this tree, making sure that every year, this is a tree that has some sort of disability. Think about it that way. So you don't want to over crop it. Make sure that you are minimizing as much as possible stress. So just keep good moisture in the soil. If you have some mulch that you can put around the base of the tree to cover the surface and helps you modulate temperatures of the roots, anything that you can do to alleviate stress will help keep that tree going, and hopefully it survives the winter and it keeps going for a very long time. You could also graft it, but I think that would have been an option this spring. I think that it's going to be very difficult to do a bridge graft at this point.
Christelle, you wanted to add in here.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that when you have a tree that's stressed, you may have borers that will lay eggs in some of those trees. So you might want to pay attention a lot if you see any kind of damage or things that could look odd in that lower trunk. There are borers, different type of borers, beetles and moths that like stressed trees and that are going to be burrowing in the wood. So I would pay attention to that.
And if you see them, what do you do?
Well, so depends on which one it is, but there used to be some treatments you can do on the trunks, but now we can't do those anymore. So some people will, and I don't know, the research hasn't been really great on that, but you can paint the trunk white. That can help deter some of them. But for some of them, like ambrosia beetles, its stressed trees will produce ethanol, and that's very attractive to those beetles. Mm. And so, yeah, I mean, it's going to probably end up being insecticides that you will have to spray. But I would say for now, just pay attention and look if you see any kind of potential damage and holes in the base of the trunk.
Anyway, I guess shouldn't be too surprised in a way that the tree produced all kinds of apples, because when a plant like that is under stress, isn't that what it does, Leslie?
To my understanding, yep.
Yeah, you usually see that. You see, when we stress plants, you could see like more flowers. It's sort of like a mechanism of trying to reproduce as much as possible. But however, I mean, those fruits are very low quality because the whole point of it is just to have viable seeds and not a good fruit. And then another thing that could happen, and it's very common to see in trees but also on grapevines, is that if you have damage to the trunk and there's limitations in water movement, that the tree might collapse in the middle of the season. So that tree might look great now, but if you start seeing that the tree is starting to decay and it's wilting and the fruit is dropping, it's because it cannot keep up with the demand of water and the temperatures, like the high temperatures, and then the tree just collapses because it has, it's sort of has half of the pipes to be able to move that water now that the has the damage.
So would you, if this tree is covered with apples, would you pull some off?
At this point, it's not going to make a huge difference because it's so much time has passed already. So it might help alleviate. Another thing that I've told a lot of, especially the commercial growers that are not able to irrigate. So irrigation would be the first thing. But if they're not able to irrigate and they want to save this tree, would be some summer pruning. And with the summer pruning, removing leaves and also removing some of that fruit.
taking a look at all things related to growing fruit plants today on Garden Talk with our guests, Leslie Holland, Christelle Godot, and Amaya Atucha, all from the UW-Madison. It's great. They're fruit experts, and it's wonderful having them with us today. You can join in with your own questions. I think there's still a line open at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you'd like, you could email us to ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau's our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at fruit plants today on the show, fruit trees and shrubs, vines with our guest today, Leslie Holland. She's a plant disease person. Christelle Godot is an insect expert. And Amaya Atucha is fruit production. So those are our three guests. They're all from the UW-Madison, and they've been coming in for a while now, and it's great to have them with us. And so if you got a disease question, a bug question, just a general question, you can join in the show, and we'd love to have you. Catherine in Chippewa Falls, we'll go to you next. Catherine, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. Hi, thanks so much. And I think maybe you actually were answering a similar question while I was calling in about apple trees. So I am here at my late beloved parents' property, and just yesterday I realized that this old, decrepit-looking, gnarled tree is bearing fruit. It is an apple tree, and it's literally at a 45-degree angle. It's been pushed over by a young maple tree that was in its little wire cage. And so I'm trying to remove this maple. I mean, it's only about like a 4-inch diameter. But just wondering what I can do. As I said, I was listening while waiting to some of the things you were suggesting to the last caller. This tree is because it's at a 45-degree angle, but it's quite tall, but it's got a lot of yellow leaves. But at the same time, lots of green apples and a couple red ones. And I just saw one in the driveway yesterday and realized it was bearing fruit, which makes me so excited. So my first question would be, am I able to gently eventually ever straighten it? Can I sort of bit by bit push it up? And then also, why are the leaves yellow? And I'm sorry, I wish I had a bug. I wish I had an insect question because I'd rather.
Thank you.
That knowledge.
Okay, so
the bending. We're looking at a 200-year process.
Yeah, right? No, that's just not going to happen. I mean, what you could do is you're going to have. I mean, because it's at the base of the tree, that bending is just going to stay there forever. What you could do is you could prune it in a way that you generate new branches that you could keep vertical, like straight from that angle. So the base you're not going to be able to change. So you could go in the winter and do some severe pruning, removing some maybe of the limbs that I would assume are touching the ground. So that would be the first thing I would do. If you're going to do this, and it's a relatively big tree, I always recommend this is a process that's going to take several years. So maybe go in the winter, and if you have big branches that are touching the ground, just remove maybe one or two of them from the very base. And then the following year, do the same until you have removed all of these big branches and you can retrain the top part of the tree. Regarding the question on the leaves being yellow, well, I assume that this tree is not irrigated, so drought might be the main reason why the leaves are yellow. If you're irrigating it, I would suggest maybe something related with some nutrient deficiency, but I would assume that it's mostly drought. And so if you have any way of irrigating and alleviate it, or if you have already got some rainfall, that's perfect. The fruit that is stressed will develop color earlier, so that's why you're seeing some of your apples are already developing color. That's a reaction to stress, and also that means that fruit is probably not going to grow anymore. And you know, you might get some good apples, but in general, don't expect a really high quality of apples this year.
Yeah, and Leslie, drought seems like the perfect reason, as Amaya said, for the yellowing. Would there be any diseases that would cause yellowing?
Certainly, there are definitely some foliar diseases. One in particular is kind of reemerging an apple called apple leaf blotch, and it does actually end up leaving a lot of the leaves looking yellow with kind of blotches of purple or darker colors. And we did see more of that last year in Wisconsin and commercial orchards, and a lot of that had to do with not having sufficient coverage of fungicides. And so, again, this tree, if it's not being irrigated, it's probably not receiving fungicides either, so it could certainly be susceptible to infection.
Yeah. Catherine, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Matt in Middleton will go to you. Hi, Matt.
Hello. I'm a commercial grower. My son's 14, and he wanted to start trying some blueberries this year. He bought 20 plants from a supplier, and he's noticing some of them are having yellow leaves on them. The supplier suggested it might be a form of mildew. To me, it looks like downy mildew would look on cucurbits. What would be the best fungicide, or do you agree with the supplier that that could potentially be mildew or something else?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it could be yellow for several reasons. I mean, of course, drought's something we have to consider. But from a disease perspective, powdery mildew can cause some yellowing on leaves, and it's very likely in a year like this when it's been so dry with a little bit of humidity. There aren't a lot of chemistries recommended for powdery mildew, actually, on blueberry for that disease in particular. Other things I would highly consider, though, to look into, because I've seen it a lot on other blueberries this year, are canker diseases. Things like Phomopsis or Botrysophoria cause some types of dieback, and the leaves start to kind of either become yellow to brown or just turn directly brown. And that could also be an issue we would see in a year like this. So, yeah, not much in terms of fungicide management for powdery mildew. Just planting varieties that are going to be a bit more resistant is the best.
Best approach. There you go, Matt. Thank you so much for calling. And again, you could join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address ideas@wpr.org. Jeannie in Amherst. Oh, we lost Jeannie in Amherst. Had a pear tree that she cut down too soon. I don't know what happened there. But let's go to emails. A listener emailed to say they have noticed no or few jumping worms this year. Is it too much to hope for that they might have been killed or decreased at least by severe drought earlier this summer? What do you think, Christelle?
That's a great question, and I really don't have an answer for it. So I know we have jumping worms for sure. I would suspect that jumping worms like moist environment. So that would be my guess. But I really don't work at all with jumping worms and don't know anything about that. So I think it would be best. There are people that are working on jumping worm. There's a specialist at the Arboretum that gave a talk to us on them. So I think that would be best to look for a better answer.
Yeah, yeah. Amaya, anything from you?
Nothing, no.
So that remains a mystery. My guess is that they have not left entirely.
Oh, leaving? I'm sure no.
We haven't killed them all off, unfortunately, because it would be really wonderful if we had. David in Jefferson will go to you next. Hi, David.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 70-year-old mulberry tree in the front of my farm, and it still bears fruit, but it's slowly splitting from the center. And I was actually in Japan not long ago, and I noticed they use these massive T-shaped stakes to help support the limbs of old trees to keep them from falling. And I'm wondering if that's a practical solution here in southern Wisconsin.
Amaya?
Absolutely. I mean, that is, if you have only one tree, yes, you can do that. It's not something that we would ever recommend on a commercial situation. But yes, you can definitely use support for those branches. Yep.
How would you do So you're supporting, David, you were talking about a limb that's reaching over, or?
I mean, a friend of mine who is a botanist in Australia said it's almost like a spider tree where it's reaching out and it's splitting from the center. And I've had to cut the lower limbs to reduce the weight. But I'm just worried that the large, older limbs will eventually give way. And it's an iconic, beautiful tree that's been in the local paper.
Yeah. Yeah. Just providing support so that it doesn't continue splitting would definitely be one solution if you want to maintain, you know, the architecture of the tree. I mean, the other thing, as you said, is just pruning and trying to revigorate some of those limbs by, you know, just cutting them down and hoping that you can get new regrowth from those cuts. That, you know, if you do that in the spring, you will probably see some new, like, water sprouts coming out of that. That would also release a lot of the tension. So you have, I mean, I think both options would work.
David, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Christelle, there aren't as I haven't seen as many Japanese beetles this year as in past years, but we do have a question about it. What about controlling, or what kinds of treatments can you or do you usually recommend when it comes to Japanese beetles?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's one we get all the time. So this year, we definitely haven't seen as many as we used to on grapes. I'm expecting that with the prolonged drought that we've been having, considering that they overwinter in the soil and the larvae are going to be in the soil until they emerge as adults, that emergence has been delayed. So I think delayed emergence because of the soil that's so dry and compacted. And then potential some mortality and lower population. So we shall see what happens with that. If people wanted to apply anything to control Japanese beetle, that is not my recommendation, definitely, especially not for homeowners. I would highly suggest that people just handpick and protect in any way they can, if they want to put a netting over their plants or something like that. But if they wanted to spray, there are different options. So it depends on where you are on the spectrum from, you know, no spray all the way to conventional sprays. Things that people can do are going to be kaolin clay. That's one that they can get at the garden store. There's also azadirachtin, and those are organic. And Bacillus thuringiensis, I think there's some that are available commercially. Galleria is the one that you can find potentially at garden stores, I think. But then if you're going into something that's going to be more conventional, and you have those already, that will be carbaryl and cypermethrin, Zeta cypermethrin, are two that are available for people to use. But again, I would not recommend, if you don't have to spray any insecticide, especially not this year.
Yeah, especially not this year. Ellen emailed, she got two different varieties of apple trees for Mother's Day this year, and they apparently planted and are doing well, and that was for Mother's Day, so May. Anything she needs to do to them before winter? I'm not sure where she's calling from, but you got a new tree, a couple new trees in the ground. What are you, and thinking about, okay, what's going to happen this fall and winter? What do you?
So we already at the end of July, so I would not recommend to apply any fertilizer at this point. So if this question would have come to me in like the end of May or when those trees were planted, I would say fertilizer would be one. You really want to encourage as much growth as possible. And usually we want to put the fertilizer early in the spring and not in the middle of the summer or in the fall, because that affects the ability of the trees to harden and be able to survive the winter. So that is really important for us here. The other thing, irrigation. I mean, very stressful year for new trees. New trees have very, very small root systems, so the amount of volume of soil that they can explore to get the water is very small. So you need to do frequent irrigation. It's more than the quantity of irrigation, is the frequency irrigation. So irrigating, you know, maybe every other day or every 2 days, especially with the growing conditions that we have had. And then the other thing very important is, as we were previous caller or email, I don't remember what it was, a tree guard. Protect those trees. I mean, just don't let those trees go into winter without a tall tree guard to get all type of voles and rabbits away, because if they chew on that tree is probably not going to survive, and the tree's going to die.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I would just add, you mentioned water, but going into winter, going into ground freeze up, I think we want to be watering.
Yeah,
pretty
definitely.
Much right up to, do we not?
If we keep those roots moist during the fall, we can have pretty warm falls here in especially in southern Wisconsin. It just gives another chance to the tree to just mobilize a lot of nutrients for the following growing season. Also, the more water you have in the soil, the slower the process of freezing of the soil, and then the tree can adjust to that, especially the root system. So proper moisture is very, very important, not only for young trees, but for trees in general. But in this case, yeah, specifically because the root system is so small, you want to do everything possible to, you know, let them grow and be, you know, stress-free.
Dan emailed to ask if, really interesting question, if domestic apple trees have a longer life expectancy than a grafted hybrid apple tree.
Oh, that's a strange question. I think that what they're trying to ask is whether if you start a tree from a seed versus you graft it, is there's going to be any difference in the lifespan? And I don't think so. If you keep that grafted tree healthy, like that union and the graft union is properly done, so that's completely healed, and then you have the formation of this new cambium all around the trunk, I don't see any reason why a grafted tree, even new cultivars, it doesn't matter, would live a shorter life than that a tree that comes from a seed.
Let's go to John in Elgin, Illinois. Hi, John.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
My neighbor's peach tree has several limbs that grow over the fence into my yard, and the tree produces beautiful peaches, but they get some sort of insect that bores a little hole into the peach, and the whole peach starts to rot. It bears beautiful fruit and has for the last 2 or 3 years, so what can I do to prevent that?
All right, Christelle?
Well, what kind of insect are you seeing in there? Are those like caterpillars that you see inside the fruit, or do you see any kind of insects afterwards, like a moth or something like that?
I never see any insects in the fruit. I've seen some little black bugs that seem to crawl out of a hole in the fruit.
Oof.
And I'm not sure if they are the ones that cause the damage, or if they just came along later.
Yeah.
That's a good question. It's hard for me to diagnose this way because, like, as you probably know, there's a lot of insects. I think that, are you seeing that on all the peach trees, the peach fruit, or just some?
As they ripen, they all get the damage. I've not been successful in eating one peach so far.
Oh, wow. So, you know, on the, if you type Wisconsin fruit on any browser on the internet, you can find, or if you even go to the UW Learning Store, you can find some publications on growing peach in Wisconsin. And I think in there you can find some information. Am I just pulling up? It could be potentially peach twig borer. That's a possible insect that you could have. But as far as like telling you exactly what you could do, I'm not sure exactly what would be your best option at this time.
If you had peach tree borer, what would you do?
It's a good question. The only insecticide that I see labeled for homeowners will be permethrin. So if you were to spray anything, that's what I would look
into. Organic.
If you have it in every single peach that you see, I would probably suggest considering that and trying to get a handle on that population. I don't have, off the top of my head, the timing exactly on when you want to do that, but that's what I would investigate.
Yeah. And that's something, if you had a good photo of the insect.
Maybe a follow-up question. Do you see any frass coming out of those holes where you say that the insect is coming out of?
Frass?
Yeah.
That's the poop of the insect.
So what does it look like?
It looks like brown pellets.
Brown pellets? Okay.
Yeah, very small.
No.
Not seeing that.
Yeah, ideally, what I would highly recommend for you to do is to take some pictures of that and send those pictures to PJ Leash or insect diagnostician. He's going to be able to help you identify based on, you know, pictures of the insects is ideal, obviously. Sometimes with the damage, we can also do an assessment of what it is. But PJ Leash, or insect diagnostician at UW-Madison, is going to be
You go to the, John, you could, even though you're in Elgin, Illinois, you could still
well, that's totally fine.
Get a hold of, go to the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, if you just type that in. And if you can send, if you got any kind of photos that you can send, maybe a photo of the fruit, but then if you can get the insect as close as you can, that would, I think, be very, very helpful. And PJ is, one thing about PJ is he's really quick.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you get an answer right now from him. I'm always surprised at how quickly he answers. So the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, and it's PJ Leash. So, John, good luck. And so John's kind of the beneficiary of his neighbor's peach tree.
That sounds great.
And peach trees, we, you know, Elgin, Illinois, okay, you're going to maybe have more peach trees there than we're going to ever have here, right?
It's very difficult to grow peaches here in Wisconsin.
And they do have more in Illinois, for sure.
Yeah, Illinois, and obviously Elgin, Illinois, at least in John's neighborhood, they do pretty darn well. John, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. George emailed to ask when he harvested a summer crisp pear. They're now half red and a little bigger than, or when should he harvest a summer crisp pear? They're now half red and a little bigger than an egg. What size egg?
It's a little bit earlier to
that's
to
a, it's too early. Yeah.
So as I said before, a lot of the color development that we see on the fruits, whether it's the apples, in this case the pears, we've also seen, you know, the change of colors for grapes. If the trees are stressed, that process is going to happen a little bit earlier. So under the conditions that we have had this growing season, where it's a little bit, you know, we have had drought and it's warm, it's the trees will start developing, the fruit will start developing some of its color earlier, but that doesn't mean that the fruit is ready. In general, the earliest that you would have pears ready to pick here in Wisconsin, I would say late August.
Yeah, that's usually about the time. I don't have a pear tree, but... Yeah.
The other thing that you can do is you can do a test, but regardless, I think it's too early right now, but if you don't know when to harvest them, you could do a test. And so you can start in late August, take some, just put them in the counter, let them ripe, they're going to soften. And if that doesn't happen in a period of 10 days, then it means that those fruits are not ready. You need to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah. Well, I have plenty of opportunities because there are lots of pear trees in my neighborhood. And people are always happy to share. Hey, we're talking about fruit today. Fruit, we did a little vine, I guess, question. Fruit vines or fruit bushes or fruit trees. All the kinds of things that go along with them, from insects to disease to just growing them properly. And I hope you'll join in with your questions as we move along today. Open lines get you on pretty quickly. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Or you can email us, and we have some emails here. The email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us for another edition of Garden Talk. Leslie Holland is one of our guests today on the program. Christelle Godot, another of our guests, and Amaya Atucha, our third guest. They're all fruit experts from UW-Madison and UW Extension. Great to have them with us today to answer your questions, and I hope you'll join in as we move along. And I also want you to join me and author Mary Wimmer on August 24th. If you ever wondered what it would be like to attend a live broadcast, well, we've got a good deal for you. We have a live broadcast of our book club. We call our book club Read Along with Larry. Very original. We'll broadcast from the 7-acre dairy company. It's nestled along the the Sugar River in picturesque Paoli. And it's a beautiful facility. It's on the National Register of Historic Places. I think they've spent something like $10 million on it over the last year or so to kind of really spruce it all up. But Mary Wimmer is our guest because she's the author of our latest novel for our book club. And the novel's called The Art of the Break. It's the story of Charlotte, or Charlie, her life in rural Wisconsin as she struggles to revive her family's cheese factory. Also, she wants a stable home for her daughter and kind of to find herself. And so we'll be talking with her. You can attend at the 7-Acre Dairy Company in Paoli and ask your questions. We're going to have some refreshments afterwards. You can talk with me if you want, but Mary probably more likely. And it's a free event, but I have to tell you that space is somewhat limited. And so we require registration, even though it's free. We need to know. We can't oversell, but we don't want to undersell it either. So there you go. Easy to register for it. I think we have a link on our page, but just go to WPR.org/presents. WPR.org/presents. And tell you what, we'll get you registered and you'll have a lot of fun. It's August 24th. There's even an inn connected with the 7-Acre Dairy Farm. I was thinking about staying overnight myself. Anyway, great dining there. So it'll be a lot of fun. Mary Wimmer and her book, get a copy of her book. It's a dandy. I'm reading it right now. It's called The Art of the Break. Well, we're talking about the art of fruit trees and fruit bushes and vines on the show today with our three guests and lots of questions. So we'll go back to the phones and to Gene and Stevens Point. Gene, thank you for calling.
Okay, so I recently planted an apple tree about 6 or 7 feet tall in close proximity to a soft maple. Is an apple tree compatible with a soft maple?
I mean, it's not going to hurt, is it?
I don't think that there will be any incompatibility. The question more is, how big is your maple tree, and is it going to be shading your apple tree? If that maple tree is a very big maple tree with an extended root system, then the new young apple tree will probably have a lot of problems trying to expand into that area where there's already roots from that maple tree. So that might be one of the issues more than incompatibility. I would worry about that. Then I don't know a lot about maple trees, so I don't know if there's any particular disease or insects to worry about. But I think that probably what's going to happen is that if the young apple tree is being shaded, and again, that maple tree is pretty big, it might have a harder time to establish than if you were to plant it without any root competition.
Yeah. Yeah, makes good sense. Gene, good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. John in Oak Creek, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hello, everybody. I had a question about, we planted a plum tree about 4 years ago, and we've had mixed luck. One year we had a lot of plums, and the next year not. But this year we just got crushed by aphids. And we've sprayed it, but we're just getting crushed, and all the plums have pretty much fallen off. So I'm wondering what we could do next year.
Christo, what do you think?
I'm sorry to hear about your aphid situation. What would be recommended really would be horticultural oils that you would want to spray earlier in the season. That will help kind of prevent the populations from really going, high. That's one thing that you can do. You can also, but if you have such high population, that's going to be tough. But you can also apply an insecticide. So there's different things that you could apply. Insecticidal soap is one that I think you probably have tried that already, or washing off the aphids from the tree with high-pressure water is something also you can try. But there's permethrin that you could try, cypermethrin, things like that. I don't know. What did you spray?
I'm not sure. My wife had it. It was the kind of a typical thing. You put in the spray deal, and you pump up the deal and spray the leaves like after it rains or something.
Yeah. So if you have a bad population, you could try something like that, like a pyrethroid or a carbaryl. Or you can wait for next year and you would do that early in the season and spray as soon as you see some signs.
with a horticultural oil.
Can I add something to the horticultural oil, which is actually a really good practice? And maybe at this point you're not going to be able to do anything, but you want to make sure that you don't have this problem next year. Make sure when you're applying the oil, the tree is still dormant. So you want it right before you start seeing those green tips. You want to apply that, because if not, you will affect the young tissue coming out with the oil, because you're basically desiccating it, and you're not. That's how you're basically killing the aphids. So make sure that you're applying the horticultural oil when the trees are still dormant.
So before there's any buds?
No, before you start seeing any activity, any green,
new
growth. Okay. So you could do these, you know, in May, early May.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Earlier would work for sure. Yeah. If you have a history and you have a big population this year, I would recommend that.
All right. John, there you go. Thank you for calling. Got another John, this one in New Berlin, though, so let's go there. Hi, John.
Good morning, Larry.
What's on your mind today?
On my mind is water sprouts on severely pruned apple trees. Just a bit of background for your guests. These trees were supposedly these short semi-dwarf or dwarf trees planted many, many years ago, which got totally out of control. Over the past 8 years, I've been lopping off 2 to 3 feet a year. They're now down to the point where I can actually get to the top of the trees on my ladder. But they're now, they've been producing profuse water sprouts. And I, you know, can I be pruning them now too? And what's a strategy to try to minimize the water sprouts?
Excellent question. So when you said they were planted many, many years ago, I can tell you those were not dwarf trees, because it's only been in the last maybe 50 years that we have had semi-dwarf, and it's only been in the last maybe 20, 15 years that we really have truly, truly dwarfing rootstocks. So, but to answer your question, which is an excellent question, and a lot of people struggle with this, like you prune them in the winter and you remove these old big limbs, and then you have all this regrowth. So when we prune in the winter, we actually stimulate new growth on the area where we made the cut. However, when we prune in the summer, when we do summer pruning, we debilitate the tree. Because what we're doing is we're removing foliage that is producing photosynthesis, is producing, you know, sugars for the tree. So if you're taking part of those limbs and those leaves that are producing photosynthesis, the tree tends to be debilitated. So our strategy to deal with those water sprouts is you probably are going to start seeing right now that those water sprouts are going to be setting a terminal bud. So at the very end of the tip, there's going to be a round bud. There's not going to be any more production of new leaves. When you start seeing that, that usually happens around this time, what you can do is you can either fully remove those water sprouts from the very base. But if you want to keep some of them because you want to reform that branch, what you can do is you can cut them down once that bud has set. What that is going to do is going to prevent that once you do the cut in the summer, then you again see regrowth, which is what you don't want. And it's going to contain those water sprouts so that next year you're going to have a more calm growth that will set flower buds. And once you have flower buds in there and you have fruit, those are going to stop growing. So go in there, choose the water sprouts that are in a good position that you can potentially become new limbs, permanent limbs in your tree, and cut them down to, you know, you can leave something like maybe, depending on how long they are, but you can leave something like, I don't know, 10 to 15 inches. And then you will, if you cut them when the terminal bud has set, you will not see regrowth, but you will see growth the following spring, and it's going to be so much more calm. You won't have those very aggressive growth. So a combination of winter and summer pruning is ideal for the situation that you have.
John, does that help out?
Oh, that's terrific. I'm going to start pruning those water sprouts now.
Great.
Okay, thanks a lot for calling. Kellen Sugar Camp, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. Has there been any advances in breeding peach or apricot trees for northern Wisconsin? I'm just north of Rhinelander. And my second question is, I was under the impression that the dwarf Montmorency cherry trees, the ones that you grow for sour cherries for pies, they only live like 4 or 5 years or produce for 4 or 5 years. Is that true?
Okay.
So the second question about the lifespan of the Montmorency's tart cherries, no, that's not true, actually. If the tree is healthy and you don't have any cold damage on the tree, sustained cold damage, that tree can keep growing. There's I think that usually what happens that is cherries in general, and the same as peaches, they're very susceptible to cold damage. So if you have a tree like this tart cherry, even though tart cherries tend to be more cold hardy than peaches and the sweet cherries, if you are in a spot where it's very cold, that tree will sustain cold damage every winter and eventually it's going to die. So that's where you're thinking maybe those trees do not live that long. But if you put them in the right spot and that tree doesn't have any cold damage, there's no reason why those trees should not live for a very long time. You know, 20 years, 25 years. We have plenty of them in Door County, mm-hmm. in the peninsula where we grow tart cherries, and they definitely live more than that.
And then quickly, anything on peach and apricot trees for northern Wisconsin? Any new research that you guys are aware?
Not that I know of. There's, you know, most of the breeding of peaches is mostly on more like Mediterranean climates. So we have things like in California. There's also in southern Wisconsin, like in South Carolina. There's some breeding programs there. We do have a breeding program in the University of Minnesota, though I don't know if they are actively working on developing cold hardy peaches.
Talking today with three guests, Leslie Holland, assistant professor in fruit crops pathology in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison, Christelle Godeau, associate professor in fruit crop entomology at UW, and Amaya Atucha, associate professor and fruit crop specialist in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about growing fruit, trees, bushes, vines with our guests today. Back with us from UW-Madison and Extension are Leslie Holland, assistant professor in fruit crops pathology. Leslie has done a great job with the Department of Plant Pathology. Christelle Godeau as well. Christelle, though, is an associate professor and fruit crop entomologist in the Department of Entomology. And Amaya Atucha, our associate professor in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences. Great to have them with us. Lots of callers online. We've got some emails. So, you know what? I think we should just go right to the phones and to Kurt in Potosi. Hi, Kurt.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, we have a big garden. We raise a lot of berries and fruit, and the black raspberries, we had a nice crop this year. One of the things that I didn't pay attention to is the ideal time to prune the new growth is 2 or 3 feet. You should pinch off the end of them, but I didn't do that on very many, so I have a lot of very, very, very long black raspberry plants right now. Is it better just to leave them go now, or should I cut it back to 4 or 5 foot or 3 foot now? Would they spread out enough lower down to branch out more, which is what the pinching out is supposed to do?
Okay, so I assume that these are floricane production of black raspberries. So you're leaving those canes through the winter, and out of those canes you're getting flowers in the spring. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a tough question. I would say look if you see that there are still new leaves coming out of the top of those canes. If there's actively new leaves being produced, I think that if you pinch them, you will see a response. If you're already seeing that those are stopping their growth and there's like you see very little new leaves coming out, it means that even if you pinch them, maybe they're already starting to settle into the initial portion of the dormancy. And one of the cues for that is that the days are getting shorter at this point. And so that would be my recommendation. Just take a look. If they're still producing new leaves, you could go ahead and tip them, and you will see a lateral response. If they are already slowing down, that you might not see any effect, and you might not see that regrowth, and you're just going to end up with much shorter canes and then, of course, less flowers for the following spring.
Yeah. There you go, Kurt. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Mary in Green Bay next. Hi, Mary.
Hello. I have a Cortland apple tree. I believe it's a Cortland apple tree that's probably 80 years old, if it's a day old, that continues to produce abundantly. And I would say for the last, 15 years or so, there's been a persistent problem, and I don't know if it's gotten worse or not, but where someone told us it's called water core, where there are spots primarily on the bottom of the apple, some of the apples on all of this, the bottom of the apple, and sometimes it goes up around the core itself. That looks transparent. So the apple tastes good. There are no sign of any kind of blight or bugs or anything of that nature. And we just don't know exactly what that is and what the remedy might be for it. I think at one point someone suggested there might be a nutrient deficiency for the tree, you know, some calcium deficiencies or something like that.
Yeah,
it's a classic disorder that you can see on apples, and it has to do with the amount of accumulation of sugars within the apple, the apple itself. So it's mostly like sorbitol, that's the main sugar that you have in the apples. There's actually not a lot that you can do. There's more varieties that tends to be more susceptible than others. It also has to do with the timing of when you pick the apples. So one of the things that I would recommend is that you might want to pick those apples a little bit earlier so that you don't see that effect. That would be one thing. And then you just let them ripe on the counter. That would help reduce the amount of sorbitol that is being deposited from the leaves into those fruits. I mean, ideally, we want that sugar in that fruit, but in this case, you're having excessive amounts of it. We also tend to see this in things like Red Delicious also have the same thing. So one of the things that you would do would be to try to harvest them a little bit earlier, because overripe fruit will show a lot more of that water core.
So what do you mean by a little bit earlier?
You could harvest them 10 days or 2 weeks before. That would be one thing. There's other. I mean, there is definitely nutrients associated with all of these physiological disorders. So things like proper applications of nitrogen. Like you don't want excessive application of nitrogen. You can also fertilize with calcium. Calcium is another nutrient that really helps with fruit quality. But the reality is, at the end of the day, the most important thing is the timing of the harvest, because there's nothing else that you can do but to stop that deposition of sugar into that fruit so the water core doesn't develop. So 10 days before your anticipated time would be fine. People always ask me, how do I know when the apples are ready? One very simple way of doing this is that you can collect some apples, just cut them in half and just dip them in iodine. And if you see that the fruit becomes black, that means that there's a lot of starch still on that fruit, so that fruit is not ready to eat. When that starch starts converting into sugar, that staining is going to disappear. So you will see that there's less and less staining. So you want to get to a point where you can only see between 10 to 20% of the surface of the fruit being stained.
Can you still buy iodine?
I mean, we use this. this is a way that we can track commercially.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we definitely get them in the lab.
Well, I haven't looked in the pharmacy iodine lately, so I don't know.
Isn't there some products that you can use, like when you get a cut or where you have like some sort of like wound that you can use that contain iodine? So maybe you can use
something that at least contains iodine.
It's the iodine that's going to react with the starch. So that's a way that you can determine that. But yeah, going back to your question with this detour about iodine, just harvest them a little bit earlier.
Yeah, There you go, Mary. Thank you. Jody in Brooklyn, Wisconsin. Your turn. Hi, Jody.
Hi. Thank you for taking my questions. I have a pear tree on the property I moved to a few years ago. It's well established, and last year it produced really well. But I would like to know the best way to care for this pear tree in the future as to how much water, do you fertilize them, when to prune them, that type of thing.
Okay, so that's a very broad question. But, well, watering, yes, especially when we don't get any precipitation. So if there's like something between like, you know, 10 to 15 days and we have gotten less than 2 inches of rain, then I would say you need to supply additional water. If the tree is very well established and has a pretty big root system because the tree is old, then the tree will be able to find some water from underground water. So that could help alleviate that. In terms of pruning, yes, the trees need to be pruned. You want to prune them, especially in the spring, when they are still dormant. That's the best time to do the pruning. So I would say if you can prune them, like, you know, in April, that would be probably ideal. In terms of fertilizer, if your tree is producing enough fruit, you don't see that the leaves have any pattern of fruit nutrient deficiency. And with that, I mean the leaves are not getting yellow or the leaves are not showing, like, you know, maybe a chlorosis in which a part of the leaf is yellow, but then maybe the veins of the leaves are still green. If you don't see any of that and you have good fruit quality, you have abundant fruit, then it means that your soil is probably fertile enough to be able to support the production of fruit. So that is in general terms. I also want to point out that we do have a publication in Extension. So if you go to the learning store of the Division of Extension at UW-Madison, you will find a publication that is called Growing Pears in Wisconsin. It covers all the basics about how to grow pears. And I think the number of the publication is A2072. So just go to any browsers and just type UW-Madison Extension Learning Store.
Actually, you can just type Growing Pears in Wisconsin and you'll find it.
Perfect. Yeah. You can do that too.
But if you're thinking peaches, we don't have one for peaches. I don't think, because we haven't had much luck with peaches. But maybe I'm wrong. I am pretty sure Christelle will let me know.
I can tell you. So what we have is growing apricots, cherries, peaches, and plums in Wisconsin.
All together in one. Okay. All right. There we go. Deb in Richland Center, your turn. Hi, Deb.
Hi. Thanks for the show. I have a one-acre plot in Zone 4. Gets a lot of sun. After a heavy rain in a non-drought year, the soil can get real soggy, but it does drain. Are there any fruits that could withstand that?
For a wet area. And it's... Tell me once more, Deb. Is the ground wet for how long?
It's sporadically wet. It's sporadically wet. So only after a heavy, heavy rain, the ground will be, you know, walk on it, and it's a little sloshy, but it does drain. And this year, a heavy rain, it's just normal.
Okay.
So, in general, there's not a single fruit tree that likes to have, you know, saturated soil. I mean, the only exception to it that you could survive are cranberries. And I don't think that you want to grow cranberries there because it's very difficult to grow cranberries. But what I would recommend is that you can do sort of like a raised bed. So if you want to plant things like an apple tree, what you could do is you can gather some of that soil. And even if you have soil from other part of the property that tends to have a better drainage, that has maybe a little bit more sand, and you can just raise a bed and just do like a little mound and plant your trees there. And that would really help with the drainage, and they would keep the top part of the root system in an area where there's pretty good drainage. And so that would be one alternative if you want to have fruit trees there. Or like the same is true for, you know, any bushes like blueberries and raspberries. Much easier to do that when you have a single tree than when you have something like a raspberry patch.
We have Ellie in Eau Claire up next. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Hi there. Thanks for the show. They're always good, Larry. My question is about blueberries. I have a blueberry hedge instead of a blueberry patch, and it's been in for probably about 10 years, and I've never done any serious pruning to it. And I was just wondering, first of all, how much, I know you should only prune one third of the bush at a time, but I'm wondering about when to prune, and do the berries come on new growth or old growth?
Very good question. So you want to prune in the spring when the tree, when the bush is still dormant. I think that that's a good rule of thumb. Do not remove more than a third of the entire, you know, biomass of the bush. Regarding where do the flowers come? So the flowers will be produced, all the growth that you're seeing this year, the active growth of this year, next year will have flowers. So flowers are born in one-year-old wood. That's what we refer to. So if you were to prune, let's say, in the spring of 2024, you will see new shoots coming out from where you prune. That's what you want. You want to, you know, revigorate and regenerate that area. Those new shoots are going to go through flower induction at some point in June, July, and then in the spring of 2025, you should have flowers on that regrowth from 2024.
Ellie, good luck with that. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Dave in Oshkosh with an insect question, I believe. Dave, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Say, I have a question about Japanese beetles. I have about 40 apple trees, and last year I had a terrible problem with Japanese beetles. So this year I used the clay, and then after a few weeks of that, when the beetles got too heavy, I did one spraying of something called Bonide 8, and now I'm wondering, is something like neem oil, because the clay keeps washing off. I would like to do the clay again, but with the rains being more regular, it's getting washed off, so I'm trying to figure out what to spray to keep the Japanese beetles off the apple tree.
That's a great question. So I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show, but my expectation is that we're not going to see a high population. And considering we're not seeing a lot of rain, I would stay with the kale and clay if you can. Neem oil will be a repellent. It's a little bit, I've seen some research that wasn't so great with the neem oil, so that's why I'm a little bit reticent. But I think that some people have had success with it. So you could try it. By any means, feel free to try. I think that we're not going to have a big population so far this year, and I don't think we're going to have a lot after that. But who knows, right?
Dave, yeah, have you seen a lot yet this year?
Well, so I went from because I was doing some picking them by hand, and I went from when I was using the clay, I was, you know, only getting like 20 Japanese beetles, but then one day I got 500. and so then I thought, well, then I sprayed the Bonide 8, and that has knocked them down, but now we're getting regular rain, and my problem is the clay seems to wash off. And we're getting rain. We hadn't been getting any rain, and now we're getting rain like every other day. So I didn't know what was best to keep on that would stay on the apple leaves better.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Another option, if you want to stay in the organic realm, would be azadirachtin. And then there's also another one that would be Bacillus thuringiensis that you can buy for adults that you could spray. So that's also a possibility. Other than that, you're going to end up having to spray something that's going to be a conventional insecticide, a broad-spectrum insecticide. I don't know. We're trying to figure out what's in the Bonide 8, but I didn't see what active ingredient. Do you know what's in there?
Promethin. Does that make sense?
What is it? Sorry?
Promethin.
Oh, yeah. And that would work, yeah. Did you see any effect with that? Zeta cypermethrin?
It worked great, except they specifically say only use it 3 times a year, and so I'm a little cautious about spraying that too much.
Sure, sure, and you shouldn't, for sure. So, yeah, you can, if you really, I mean, again, I don't think you're going to have a big population, so you should be okay. If you need to rotate it with something else, that would be carbaryl is what I would try. But again, one thing that you might want to consider is really just spraying where you see the beetles and not spraying all of your trees if you don't see them everywhere. And then hopefully we won't have a huge population. So then there's things you can do to prevent them from staying in your, you know, around your trees. That would be like treatments for the larvae, but that's another question.
Just to thanks, Dave, for calling. Just to kind of go along with the Japanese beetles, another listener emailed to ask what you think about milky spore for Japanese beetle control.
Yeah, that's a great question because we hear a lot about milky spore, especially for homeowners. The research doesn't back up the milky spore. And one of the reasons might very well be that it just takes so long to become active that and to provide any kind of control that it doesn't hold up when you do, you know, you would have to apply it and reapply it and really wait a long time to get any effect.
No.
So we do not recommend milky spore.
Dave, thanks again. Mike in Minocqua, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. Hi. Thanks a lot for the show. I about 15, 20 years ago, I bought some dwarf trees, a dwarf cherry tree and a dwarf plum tree. And I'm only up here part of the year, so I don't give them a lot of care, but I'm always surprised at how well they do. And, I mean, every year I get a load of cherries. Mostly they go to the birds. And then I'm getting plums now. Plums. And not plums, pears. And they're always sort of hard and small. But what exactly is a dwarf tree? It was all I could afford at the time. And now I'm wondering why it's done so well.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a great question. So when we talk about a dwarf tree, is a tree that has been bred so that the size of the tree is smaller than the size of the tree that you would get if you were to start, for example, a plum tree out of a seed. Okay, mm-hmm. so what we're doing in this case is we're trying to get trees that are smaller, that they don't produce so many branches, because what happens with the trees it's very simple. The tree produces photosynthesis, and that is basically sugars that will support growth, and the growth can go two ways. You can produce more wood, or you can use some of that sugar to produce fruit. So if you have a tree that is a standard tree, a lot of that energy is going to go into producing a really big tree with a lot of woods and limbs, and there's not going to be necessarily a lot of energy left to produce fruit. So when you have a dwarf tree, that tree, what's happening is that there's a constraint in the amount of vegetative biomass, so that is shoots and leaves that are producing, and a lot of the carbon is being partitioning into producing fruit. So it's a lot more efficient in producing more fruit and less wood. That is ideally what we want. Mm-hmm. And so that's when we refer to a dwarf tree. Mm-hmm. Tends to be a tree that is much smaller in size. It's going to put less growth, vegetative growth, and it's going to start producing fruit earlier because of that, and more quantity of that, especially if you can feed more of those smaller tree in a specific area. You are going to end up having a much higher production of fruit per area.
So, Mike, you did the right thing, even though you might not have understood it at the time. You picked the right right trees for your property, and thanks very much for calling. And Christella, Maya, and Leslie, thank you so much. Here we are out of time. Appreciate it. You'll come back and be with us again. We'll do this all over again. They're all nodding their heads yes.
Of course.
Great to have them along today. Christelle Gadeau, Associate Professor in Fruit Crops Entomologist in the Department of Entomology, Amaya Atucha, Associate Professor in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences, and Leslie Howard, Assistant Professor in Fruit Crops Pathology in the UW Department of Plant Pathology. They'll be back. We'll do it again. Monday at this time, we'll be looking up at the stars with our astronomy experts, and then we'll talk with the weather guys about heat and other things. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.